All right, welcome to another edition of Behind the Badge, Illinois. I am Kirk Brigman, your guest host for today. Today we are talking about everything dispatchers, TCs, telecommunicators, 911 operators. I have, as always, Behind the Badge, Illinois is brought to you by Team Hochberg. If you're looking to buy or refinance a home, call 855-563-2843, 855-56-DAVID. David Hochberg, our wonderful, illustrious host, is not with us today, so you have us. And on our esteemed panel, we have the amazing Chief Dave Berg from the DeKalb Police Department. We have retired Illinois State. Is it Captain Mimu Grill?
Colonel.
Yeah, goodness gracious. Mimi McGrill from the Illinois State Police. And then we have telecommunicator Kate Kleinmeyer from the DeKalb Police Department and TC supervisor and TC Eric Menson from MECOM, which is the O'Fallon Police Department, my police department. So let's get this thing started because a lot of people, I'll tell you what, I know that all that TCs do, and we're going to say TC, it means telecommunicator, is it's pretty easy. You sit in a chair, you answer the phone, you talk on the radio. Is that pretty much, Kate, talk to us about what a TC does on a normal day, because that's really, there's a lot more to it than that, right?
I think you wrapped it up. That's all we do.
All right. Well, that's good. That's a great episode.
Here at DeKalb, we dispatch for police, fire, and EMS, just for city limits of DeKalb. So we do radio traffic, dispatching, call taking, non-emergency, and 911. And then we also do a lot of stuff for our officers within the room. So a lot of lead stuff, warrant stuff, modifying records, adding things into leads. We have also like a lot of like administrative tasks that we sometimes do. And then there's three of us in the room that are TC specialists. So myself, I'm the leads coordinator. And then I have two of my other coworkers. One is like the training coordinator. And the other one does like CAD coordinator. And we're working on getting a new CAD. Right, so
real quickly, you mentioned a couple of acronyms, leads and CAD. Can you explain for our audience what leads is?
Leads is, oh gosh, should have put me on the spot of what it stands for. LEADS is the statewide database that Illinois uses. So it's like where all of our responses come back. So driver's license plates, warrants, things like that. CAD is computer aided dispatch. So it's our program that we use, how we enter calls, how we dispatch officers or units to calls, and how we pretty much keep track. Everything is time stamped, every keystroke, map, everything like that is all within our CAD system.
Fantastic. So there's a lot of moving pieces in that thing.
Very much so.
It's not just answering the phone and talking on the radio?
No, not much. I mean, sometimes, depends on the time of day, but yeah. No, there's a lot more that goes into it. Sometimes you are, at least with our department, our minimum is two in the room. Luckily, our staffing's up there, so we fortunately have more than that now most of the time. But you could be on the phone and dispatching at the same time. It just depends. Like, we do not have strict, you only answer phones and you only dispatch on the radio. Like, we are cross-trained and we do it every day, every shift, multiple times that we'll just cross over.
And what does a shift look like for you over at DeKalb? What are you doing? What time are you coming in the morning, or how long do your shifts last?
We are on 12-hour shifts. We just started doing that. Yep. So we're 7 to 7. So it's 7 P, 7 A, nights, days. That's all we are.
And all in one room, or do you get to leave?
All in one room.
All in one room.
But we get to, if we have enough in the room, which like I said, we have been lately, which is good. We do get to step out for an hour or take a short break, anything like that. But
Eric, can you talk about some of the things that she talked about? Is it any different down in Southern Illinois than it is up in DeKalb? In the Northern Illinois, where it's very busy.
So I noticed a lot of similarities. Just like DeKalb here at MECOM, we wear a lot of different hats. So we're doing a lot of the same radio traffic simultaneous with incoming non-emergency and emergency phone calls. We're a similar center. Our minimum is effectively two as well. Throughout the bulk of the day, we like to have as many as four. And with that in mind, we do we don't designate, you know, okay, you're a dedicated call taker. Some of the larger centers, that's how they kind of prioritize some of the work. They'll put, you know, designated call takers here and designated radio operations over there, and they kind of work together. But we're in kind of a unique situation where our size kind of limits that availability. And quite frankly, I prefer it this size, because it gives us that little bit of extra understanding for all of the various different aspects of what we do in this line of work. So I think we're kind of in that that sweet spot. You know, unfortunately there's some centers out there that, you know, only have one TC on at a time because they're small. With the state's consolidation, those are going by the wayside, and that's certainly a positive direction to go with those, because the centers with one TC at a time is detrimental, because it doesn't take much to overload one single TC, because there's so much responsibility thrust on our shoulders. It's difficult at times to stay ahead of it. So with that in mind, to answer your initial question, there's so much similarities with what we do and what DeKalb does. Similarly for MECOM, we're responsible for O'Fallon, Illinois, Fairview Heights, Illinois, and Shiloh, Illinois, and we do police, fire, and medical across the board. And every single one of us is could be pulled in any of those directions at any given time, just because this particular TC may be assigned to work, you know, O'Fallon PD's radio traffic, doesn't mean they're not going to get a 911 call for an in-progress emergency in Fairview Heights, and all of a sudden everyone in the room is going to have to shift their duties to accommodate that, to make sure that we get the best service not only to the callers but to our first responders as well.
So we're answering 911 calls, right? How many 911 calls are we answering in a year, a day? What does that look like?
Yeah, just give me one moment here. I'll pull up the specific numbers, but it's in the area of, I believe, 26,000.
26,000 911calls in a year. And not to put you on the spot, Kate or Dave, are you guys somewhere around that same thing? Or is the 911 phone ringing off the hook every day?
Some days, yeah.
Some days, yes.
I just did a presentation last year, and I don't want to get the two call types mixed up. I want to say we're right around like 1920, but I could be getting it mixed up with a different stat of the admin calls, but I don't believe so. I think it's right around 18,000 to 20,000 that we get a year.
That's a lot of phone calls. And before we move on, so since we're on the topic of 911. What is that as a telecommunicator? Tell me what is important for our citizens, our community, to know when they call 911. I mean, you know exactly where they're at, right? And you know exactly what's going on. No?
Yeah.
Okay, Kate, no. Walk me through that. What do we want people to know about when they call the police department, when they call for an ambulance, when they call 911?
We need to know where you are. That's the most important thing. You could tell me everything that's going on. You could tell me every person that's involved. But if I don't know where you are, I have no idea where to send help to you. We do have most time technology, if it's working properly. We have a general idea of where you are. So it could be like, sometimes it's like a house. We have a lot of apartment complexes here in DeKalb. We are very, but if you're at an apartment complex, it does not tell us what floor you're on. It might give us a general idea of the area of the building that you're in, but we have numerous buildings here that are anywhere from 2 to 10 stories tall. I mean, we don't know where you are when it comes to that. So where you are, where you need help, that's the most important thing. That's the first question we're going to ask, is where are you? And then from there, we will gather what is it that's going on so we can get help to you as quick as possible.
Nice. Eric, anything to add to that?
So in regards to the technology, it's kind of interesting the direction that 911 has to go. So the 911 system is really not all that old. It's about 50, 60 years old. And when it was built, it went through a couple different revisions over the years. And through the bulk of my career, we've used what's been called enhanced 911, which was basically we would get, you know, the landline telephone number that it's called from, hopefully the accurate address associated with that. But once the inception of wireless technology came out, the phone providers really had to scramble to try to figure out how to insert that location information into a system that wasn't built for it. So it got really, really complicated. And over the years, we've gotten better and better and better at it. We've since switched to what you may have heard, Next Generation 911, and more frequently, EzyNet. Mm-hmm. So a couple different, incremental steps forward. And we're in a good spot now, but there's still a lot of ground to make up. Not everyone is on the same page. Depending on where you are in the nation, you may get different 911 service, based off the technology, the technology behind it, but also the level of service from whatever center you might be calling. There's a discrepancy. Some TCs, as we discussed before, may be a little bit more spread thin than other centers. So it's going to be a little bit of a give and take there. You may not have the same level of service across the board. A lot of people assume incorrectly that 911 is kind of a national service. So they can call 911 and immediately get service wherever they need to at a split mm-hmm. second's notice. And that's certainly an ideal, but that's not always as feasible as we would like it to be.
So if I call 911 and and you're already on 911, do I get a busy signal? How does that work?
So hopefully not. It really does kind of depend a little bit on where you're calling. So you shouldn't get a busy signal ever. It should ring and ring and ring and ring and ring and ring and ring until someone hopefully picks up. I know we are in a very fortunate circumstance where, our 911 calls are answered within 2 seconds, 95% of the time. So we're sitting pretty in that regard, but not everyone's that fortunate. There's other centers throughout the nation that are struggling with staffing issues that may not have that luxury that we enjoy here. So now let's say every single one of our telecommunicators is tied up on an emergency call or sometimes a non-emergency call that does come across the 911 lines. Mm-hmm. But in either case, all of our operators are tied up. So we have backup systems in place that our excess 911 calls are going to roll over to a neighboring 911 center, otherwise known as a PSAP, Public Safety Answering Point. So for our circumstances, it's Belleville PD, who's pretty much right next door. And conversely, we're their backup as well. So if we're all tied up, it goes to the county. And if our county's all tied up, it goes to Madison County. And past that, God willing, we never find out. So it can get complicated, but there's in our neck of the woods, at least, we got a pretty wide safety net.
Fantastic. Hey, so we're going to jump down to get the Chiefs in here as well. And Colonel McGreal, so we've been talking about like local 911 centers. And Chief Bird, you can chime in on this too, as Illinois State Police also has 911 operators. What are the differences and what is that like on a statewide level for 911 operators? What are their roles and responsibilities? How's that work?
Go ahead, Pete.
Okay. So for us, we have them strategically placed like throughout the state, and they're handling, their primary is that they're handling the calls for service, but that the Illinois State Police would normally respond to. However, I mean, all types of calls come into them. So specifically up here, like I could speak to, where I came up and where I, had the telecommunicators was in the Chicago area. And a lot of their calls, they would service not only the expressways, but also the suburban departments throughout Cook County up here. And, in the room, now the room up, their war room, if you will. I want to say they had, I would say probably five to six telecommunicators a shift. They also do Cook County. So there was, and I'm telling you, every time I went into that room, they were always busy, and they were doing very similar things that our two telecommunicators on the call had said too. They were also doing other work besides that. So, I always said this is, being on the receiving end of telecommunicators and being on the street and being in the field, we couldn't do our jobs without them. They were our lifeline every single night, and we depended on them. We depended on them to give us the information we were requesting, to check in on us, our 3 minute or 5 minute watch guard time. We were depending on that. So, you know, they play a vital role. They are a necessity to our jobs as police officers on the street, but they do a whole lot of other things. So I've always been so thankful for them, throughout my career, because I know that they were in some of our big, big incidents and played a great role. So I'll turn it over to you, Dave.
Yeah. So, spot on, Mimi, because, you know, I've been involved with three communication centers in my career. Of course, I started with the state police, but I worked and they were amazing, unbelievable team from state police. And then, I worked with Chicago Police Dispatch a lot, way more than a lot of most troopers, because I had a CPD radio when I was very young, and I would always jump on their radio for, when I was within the city limits or on the streets making a traffic stop or in foot pursuit. So they always were quick to answer my call.
Chief Bird, did you just say you had a CB radio?
No, CPD.
Oh, I think you meant a CB. I thought, well, what was your call sign?
No. That'd be Smokey number one.
Okay. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
That's okay. Hey, well, we did have CBs in our old squads, though, so you're correct. And I would jump on there as well. But having the ability to communicate with Chicago Police one-on-one was huge. Very effective for me, of course. And then, then coming to DeKalb in 2021, my cup runneth over, because at the end of the day, I went down there and just amazing professional, employees who love their job. Kate's amazing. She won't beat her drum, but I'll do it for her. She just does an amazing job here. Extremely professional all the time, I can't, like Mimi said, they are a lifeline. We cannot, police officers cannot work without them. And I remember when I was with the Illinois State Police, I worked very closely with our dispatchers, and they knew who we were. I mean, they saw our face. They knew about our families. There was a connection. And I know one dispatcher, she was much older, and she almost treated me like she was my mom, but she could tell, different things with voice inflection. She was saying, oh man, she could tell sometimes when things might be getting amped up a little bit. And before I would ask for assistance, she would be, hey, go check on him, or she would send a car. And that wasn't because I asked. It was because she could hear things in my voice, or the way I was responding when I did call up, or she would overhear a conversation between myself and an offender or a violator over the radio. And she's like, that don't sound good. I'm going to send somebody, And that's the connection you get from police officer to telecommuter dispatcher. And we have that in DeKalb. I know Kate can speak about that because, I'll just say this point for her. Her husband works for me. He's a DeKalb Police Department officer. So there's that connection. So imagine that, working, with your loved one every day, of course, but being able to stay professional, even when he's in foot pursuit. I'm sure Kate's taking some of his traffic and to be worried the whole time, but still be professional enough to not let that allow her to affect her job. Just goes to her professionalism as well. So, I don't know if Eric and Kate, you guys want to talk about just the connection you have with the police officers in general. I think the community would probably like to hear a little bit about that, because they don't always know how connected we are.
Kate, yeah. Before we start, do you remind your husband of the things that he didn't do at home, like on the radio?
Oh, don't
like,
worry.
Hey, when you get home, make sure you...
If anything, it's critiquing the radio traffic. I'm like, all right, we know we have to do this. Like, why didn't we do this kind of thing? But no, Chief Bird's absolutely correct. I mean, at DeKalb here, like, we're fortunate enough to have where we are extremely close with our officers. So our dispatch center is within the police department. So we see them on a daily basis. And we have that close relationship. It's our second family. So like when something happens, big or small, it's like it affects all of us. So and that's another thing about like 911 is that not every department is fortunate enough to have that relationship with their officers. And that being said, also that they don't know the face that's behind the radio. They don't know the family that's behind that radio. So it's like, we are fortunate enough to have that. And at the same time, we get the, most of the time, we get the end result to the calls. So a lot of 911 dispatchers, call takers, you take the call, it gets dispatched, you're done with it. You don't always get to know what happened. You don't get to know the outcome. Are they okay? Are they not okay? Things like that. So like, we're fortunate enough that we do get to have that. And I think that ultimately at times helps with that closure of certain calls, because you're going to take easy calls, hard calls, but to know the outcome of it, I think that is a huge thing in moving forward from stuff.
Good. That's a good point to make. Eric, can you expand on that? So she mentioned something about, you know, how we have people, you know, within our own department, and we're fortunate like that in O'Fallon to have RTCs within our own department. But speak to how there's other agencies that have dispatchers offsite, what that's like.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, my career, I started at Fairview Heights prior to our consolidation with O'Fallon, and I'm fortunate enough, I know a lot of the guys and gals at Fairview Heights Police Department, and you know, it's an absolutely phenomenal thing when you can have that connection, that face-to-face connection with these guys and gals that you're working with day in, day out. That goes a long way to kind of quell any kind of otherwise convoluted workplace disputes. You know, we got a lot of things going on in this line of work. Tensions are generally pretty high across the board, and minor inconsistencies on both sides of the radio, a lot of times you're really just simple misunderstandings. And if you know the person on that other side of the radio, you can fill in those social gaps, so to speak, where he didn't mean to sound rude on the radio. He, in fact, I know what he's going through. I know him well enough that that's not his intention. I can give him the benefit of the doubt. So in the circumstance that we find ourselves in now over at MECOM, you know, we're stationed inside the O'Fallon Police Department, and we dispatch also for Fairview Heights and Shiloh offsite. So it's an interesting challenge. You know, we know all the O'Fallon officers very, very well, and conversely, they know all their TCs very, very well, and that's exactly what we're shooting for. That's such a huge boon for all of us involved, and it's an interesting dichotomy for us with our other agencies that we provide service for. We don't have that same level of connection, despite our best efforts, you know, and they'll call in, we'll have conversations, and day in, day out, it's a good working relationship, but it's not that same level, and which is kind of an unfortunate byproduct of the business that we do. It's such a fantastic feeling having that brotherhood almost of that in-person connection, and losing that is certainly a detriment that unfortunately is sometimes unavoidable.
Yeah. And you know, you said that, Eric, and that brought back, and you're right. And same thing with Kate is, so you do have that. You know, it's great to have that connection with the officers, but there is another side of the coin. When you do have that connection, you have that vested interest with each other. And then when someone gets hurt, you know, and we've seen this numerous times, the police officers get hurt and sometimes, unfortunately, they lose their lives. See, and you still, that connection runs deep. It hurts. I mean, like you talking about, I mean, dispatchers, it's hard. I mean, when you guys are communicating with an officer, he's in a fight for his life, and you're asking his status, and he's not calling. I think the people who are listening to us, you need to understand the impact that it has on the dispatcher, the stressors that it, you know, it's so stressful to have when you can't do anything, and, you know, and that's the part that I know I talk to dispatchers about, the feeling of this helplessness in those type of situations when they can't do anything to help other than continue to ask him to, what's your status? I'm getting you help. I have cars responding, and you don't, and they don't answer up. And it's just a feeling of helplessness. And I know how that affects our dispatchers. Eric, I'm sure you and Kate can speak firsthand about how you feel about that, you know, the stressors that come and the helplessness in certain situations, even with 911 calls. I know we've been able to give, basically CPR instruction from the phone. And then you hope and pray that the instructions are being, you know, accepted and being implemented the right way. Have you guys, I know if either one of you had to do that where you had to give instruction especially with CPR over the phone and any good stories from that or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've given CPR instructions numerous times, some successful, some not. The not ones, I don't want to say thankfully because that's not the right word to use, but when you get a call like that, the person that's there is normally very panicked. It's the worst time of their life. They're focused on what's right in front of them, that the person, and in my case, was no longer with us. But you give them every ounce of hope that you can until first responders can get there. But then I've also had the ones where it's successful and you get to hear about that, which is all the reason why we do the job most of the time. But going back to Chief Bird on the other side of things, he's absolutely correct that anything that happens to our guys, girls, we feel just as much as anyone else. Like, that's our family day in and day out. So we do everything we can, and the helpless feeling is spot on. I mean, you sit there and you can't do anything. You can call on the radio. You can try to call their phone. You can send as much help as you can. But at the seconds feel like hours. You're just waiting for someone to get on scene to see what exactly that's going on. So absolutely correct on that part of it. It's like a double-sided.
So Eric, you're a supervisor. You supervise our dispatchers, our TCs, our first of the first responders, as we say. As a supervisor, what things do you have in place? And then, Colonel McGreal, you can also expand on this. What do we have in place for our TCs to help them deal with these issues that come up, after these big calls?
So
we have stuff for officers. You know, do we have things for dispatchers?
We do. Much to Chief Bergerman's credit, you know, we're very focused on emotional well-being here at the O'Fallon Police Department and MECOM. We take that very seriously. We understand that the challenges that we have from dispatch are different, but in no way diminished from the same as the in-person responders. So one of the ways we include ourselves in those initiatives is we do have a peer support team that we've established to try to keep tabs on, you know, our folks, and it's across all disciplines. It's patrol, it's fire. I should say fire's got their own version of that. So it's patrol, EMS, and dispatch all kind of working together to make sure that we kind of keep the tabs on our folks to make sure that, you know, no one makes any rash decisions and everyone's in a good headspace and everyone gets the help that they need. It's a stressful job. There's no doubt about it. I just read the other day that suicide rates for dispatchers are actually higher than officers, which I was just floored by because it's already far too high for sworn patrolmen and women. But the fact that it's even higher for TCs was mind-boggling, and I get it. I empathize. I know the stressors of this job, and much to what Kate was saying, you know, not having the ability to reach through the phone and actually give the assistance that they need, and only just being able to use our voice and our resources to try to get things there in a timely manner that unfortunately doesn't always do the trick, and we kind of have to come to terms with that. And it's tricky at times. So in addition to the peer support team that we have that I think has done a lot of good, there's, you know, we always have to try to keep tabs on our folks. It's imperative that, you know, we have regular conversations with these people that we can pick up when things go a little bit outside of their normal range. So when Chief Bird was explaining, you know, how the TCs can interpret the subtle changes in an officer's voice when they're calling out a name or a place or what have you, and the TC automatically recognizes the fact that something's a little peculiar here, something's a little off. We have to have that same mentality for our folks internally to make sure that we get them the help that they need, because they're our most important commodity by far.
Colonel McGreal, you mentioned earlier, you were talking about, you know, like ISP And it's a little bit different. And you mentioned something that kind of piqued my interest. It's like, is that especially with your troopers out there on the road, as opposed to maybe your city cops, but your troopers, your county deputies that might be out there by themselves, with no backup. And the only lifeline that they have is that TC on the other end of the radio. Can you speak more to that about just how important that relationship is between those, you know, with those troopers that are out on the interstate by themselves for, you know, their nearest backup might be 20 minutes, 30 minutes away. Is that accurate?
Yeah, probably some of them, the backup is even longer than that. So, but yeah, I stress that lifeline is really what we've always said, is that the TCs are our lifeline. And we, you know, those troopers that their backup is that far away, that's all that they have at that moment until their backup arrives to describe whatever they have. And for that TC to know where they're at, to, you know, document what's going on, to get the resources that they need, to even just hearing that voice. Because I think a lot of it, like I was thinking on this call and I was going back to the days where Dave and I were working 290 on midnights. It's almost like a sense of you depend on it, but it's also a calming factor for us too. When we're to hear the other voice on the end, to know that somebody is there still hearing you and whatever you're doing, that they're getting you help there. So it's a calming factor for us as well. The other thing too is the response that you get back and the tone of voice that you get back to. I know just in several incidents where we might be amped up, you know, dealing with some type of incident, but the calming voice of the TC on the other end kind of brings us down a little bit. And I know a lot of them have to do that on the 911 calls too. So where they're bringing a sense of, I don't know if it's the tone of their voice. I'm curious to actually know that. Like if you're trained in that, to just be very calm, because it's very easy to get excited, but they're so good at just being calm. And it brings a sense of, you know, relief to officers, to the person calling a 911 on the other line. But again, I give them so much credit. What we're talking about here and how they feel on the other end, you know, they're going through what we're going through. Like they're in it with us. They're part of the team. We talked about like having the dispatch in the building. I always think that like with Illinois State Police, we don't have that. Not every officer is able to associate with the TCs in person because they're far away. They come on the air from their houses. So, and they go straight to patrol. So you don't have that closeness in all the troops, but we encourage getting to know each other, but it is difficult. It's not the same because you're not in the same building. So we were fortunate enough, Chief Byrd, to have that in Des Plaines, but we were still so far away from them. But we would call them and we'd go to breakfast, we'd do different things off duty. But, you know, that everyday thing, I think we don't have for all of our troopers.
Good to know.
I'm actually envious of that.
So you mentioned about how they're trained to keep people calm. And I've told this story where I was in a car accident and somebody ran from me, off duty, and I'm calling dispatch trying to give them the information, and I was a hot mess. I'm the chief of police, and I know how to talk on the radio, but I'm calling the non-emergency line, letting somebody know he's chasing after me. But at the other end of that line was somebody going, all right, where are you at? You know, like, and I didn't even tell him where I was at. You know, it was just like this. So it's those, that training. Eric, can you talk about what kind of training does a TC go through? I mean, what do we have here? I mean, is this, you show up, you throw them behind a console?
I wish it were that easy. Unfortunately, it is not. So every agency.
Is there an academy for TCs?
No, not yet. So everyone kind of does their own little thing. There's some, you know, legal requirements in there, but they're far below what is actually needed by this profession. So speaking of MECOM specifically, taking someone with no experience whatsoever until they are released from training and good to work on their own in our center, that would be about 500 hours. So I know state police, they have a little bit different. I think theirs is a minimum of 6 months. And we are kind of in a unique situation where we hire both full and part-time to join our ranks. So that's why we kind of do it hours-based to facilitate any kind of part-timers and the schedules they have to try to get them in there. But yeah, our training is regimented. We typically start off with like a kind of a classroom environment to kind of lay some basic groundwork expectations and describe in detail some of the advanced systems that we use, the databases that we draw information from to do what we need to do in this line of work. And then we kind of slowly integrate them into actual radio operations and call taking. And we do it all here. So it's kind of a typically a three-step process after that classroom environment where we have kind of a crawl, walk, run scenario, similar to what a lot of patrol agencies do. Well, you know, we kind of baby them up front, you know, loosen the leash, so to speak, in the middle, and towards the tail end, they should be doing the vast majority of everything on their own, but they have a certified communications training officer alongside them to kind of step in as needed to make sure nothing goes too far off the rails. And it's an arduous process. It's not easy for anyone involved. And unfortunately with the nationwide staffing issues that this career field is suffering from, it's pretty consistent that we have some sort of trainee in the room more often than not. And that unfortunately causes a bit of a burden through the whole center. You know, one might assume that a seasoned communications training officer plus a trainee might actually add some efficiency, but it actually just attracts because they're tasked with making sure that the trainee has the opportunity to learn and grow. And to do so properly, they have to actually take a step back and not produce the same level as they were had they just been the certified training officer working the console themselves. So it's always a bit of a drain on the center, but it's a necessary evil in that sense.
Pete Bird, what's the training program look like up in DeKalb? Or if you want to throw that to Kate, it's up
yeah,
to you.
I mean, I will turn it to Kate, but it's similar. And then like Eric said, I mean, we do have that same mechanism like we do with sworn police officers. You have the field training program, similar. We of course, we've tried to add staffing here at the DeKalb Police Department, and we're doing a great job of at least increasing the staffing to a point where, you know, I want to be able to give dispatchers extra days off. I want them to have additional help in the room. So they can be more productive and they're not taxed as much as they have been in the past. So we're working on that, you know, making sure that we're fully staffed. We have LPRs here in the city of DeKalb. So that's just another function that we had to throw onto the dispatch room. And so we wanted to make sure that we had extra bodies just to handle LPR hits. I mean, we get a ton of those a day. So we're adding additional bodies, but I know Kate can speak on our training because she's one of our lead trainers, and I'll flip it to Kate for that. She's the expert.
Yeah, I mean, we're very similar to O'Fallon. We don't really go by hours, I guess. We used to hire part-time starting out. I actually started out part-time. It was extremely difficult part-time to do this job to train. Because with us here, we were allowed 28 hours a week. You did your 28 hours, you went home. By the time you came back, it just kind of like left you. And you had to spend a day or a shift refreshing yourself on what you just did the whole previous week. So we have, we don't hire part-time anymore new. If someone chooses to go part-time from full-time, I believe it's something that's still an option. But our training program is 4 to 6 months, depending on you have experience. If you don't have experience, it's kind of that time period that we have. We hire both, and we sometimes hiring someone that has experience can be just as challenging as hiring someone that doesn't have experience, only because you have to, in a way, like break old habits that they might have, and or they have to retrain their brain to work with maybe a different database or a different program. And that can be just as challenging as learning something brand new. So very similar. We're actually kind of revamping our training program. Our training coordinator is working on that, but we have starting out hopefully with some classroom time a week or two. And we kind of work with our sheriff's office on that also, because they actually have an extra area that they're allowing us to use that's kind of set up as like a mock CAD or council, I should say. So hope to do that. And then we kind of go into, as mentioned, law enforcement, call taking, medical, however it is, and do among that. But there's no real set training regimen for the state. Every department kind of has their own way of doing things.
You're right, Kate. And it's interesting because we just recently went within the last couple of years to having a couple of weeks of classroom training and that mock CAD or that mock console system, which is interesting. You know, can anybody
do a quick question?
Oh, go ahead.
Can I ask a question to our students today? So I was thinking, like, how do you, when we're like, say someone's in a foot pursuit, okay, and the multitasking that's going on. So I'm just picturing myself like at the console, not only taking the traffic, okay, because you've got to be specific on the traffic, right? But you're also inputting the correct information. Like I always wondered that, like, how do you become so efficient at that? And I'm like in a foot pursuit, I'm giving out, black vehicle, male running with whatever, I'm giving you all these descriptors that are important. But you're having to take all that in and then type it into the computer and then dispatch it out. So how do you do that? Do you think that comes with time on, like the more you do it, the better you get at it?
I personally think so. I mean, obviously, time comes comfort. And I think that once you are comfortable within that position, which we say here is about, like, you could be done with training in 6 months, but we say like 2 years in the chair is when you really kind of feel comfortable with handling anything that might come your way, because we can't teach everything in training. We can't teach every type of call type you're going to take. We can't teach every incident you're going to come across. Like, we can only teach what's given to us. We can go through mock scenarios. We can do different types of situations, but nothing is as real as the real deal. So I think absolutely with time comes comfort, and then comes that experience of, you know what you're doing. So you have that confidence in yourself. And I think confidence in yourself is the number one thing that will get you through this job, and is what we try to instill in our trainees so much, is that you have to have confidence in yourself that this is, you can do this, that you want to do this. I can give you all these tools, all these resources, all of my knowledge, but it's up to you to have that faith in yourself that you can do this. Because if you don't have the confidence in yourself, it becomes extremely hard to continue to not only teach you, but for you to excel if you're kind of stuck because you don't have that confidence.
Eric,
you want to?
Do you think the same thing, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad Kate touched on it, because the first thing I was thinking that whole section was confidence. It's key. It's critical to what we do, which is difficult at times when you're a brand new trainee. You don't have the skill set to justify any confidence. So it's kind of like you have to kind of fake it until you make it a little bit, which is unfortunate. But it truly is a deciding factor on someone's level of success. If they can at least appear confident enough, and maybe even delude themselves in a sense that they can do this, they can, type those notes in an efficient manner, make sure the responders are all aware of it and getting help where they need to get it. I don't want to say a unique example, but when I was actively training people, I always highlighted the fact that when I first started, I was terrible. I was not good. One thing I had going for me, though, is I was persistent. I had just bought a house. My wife was pregnant. So there was no opportunity for failure. So I got better and better and better. It took me some time, about 2 years. Kate's right on the money yet again. But you just have to keep at it. And I certainly had my struggles along the way. And I was fortunate enough to work in a department that worked with me and got me over that kind of 2-year hump, and much to my benefit.
Yeah, and I think one thing also, and Mimi brought up how do you do, like, especially these high risk incidents and high stress situations, is teamwork. You know, I know times I was in foot pursuit on the west side of Chicago. I was giving out locations that TCs had never heard of. You know, they're like, I don't know where Independence and Madison is. I only know the interstate. So if I said, you know, but then one of her partners would go and rewind the tape, and he said, oh, he's at Independence and Madison. And, you know, where's that at? They get on the map. Oh, it's over here, you know, whatever. And so I know that, I know you guys work together like that sometimes. And that helps. I'm sure that helps, you know, the flow of the situation when you got a partner and say, hey, I'll handle this. You just handle the radio. Don't do anything else. And I'm sure that's something you guys do all the time as well.
I'd say that a good TC would probably make one of the best detectives out there, because they can really find anything out there. It's like, you know, you got an officer that asks on a radio, hey, can you find me a phone number for this person?
Yeah.
The person doesn't even exist. The next thing you know, they're giving you an address, a phone number, the next thing,
right.
Where they work, where their kids go to school. I mean, a good TC is amazing to have. And they can dig,
that's for sure.
We take it as a challenge.
Yes,
take it as a challenge.
It is. It's a challenge.
Like, and we're gonna find you. I'm gonna find you.
So yes, tell me about what kind of technology. I mean, you know, I mean, Chief Bird, when you started, when I started, and probably when you started, I mean, they were writing everything. There was no CAD systems, computer-aided dispatch. Everything was being handwritten onto logs.
Yeah,
you had cards that had everything. So what is this? You know, I know Eric and Kate, you're probably a little newer to the system, but what kind of technology changes are you seeing in the future for communications, TC? You know, Eric, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned before, when I first started, we had, you know, this next generation 911 kind of on the way. And that was, at the risk of getting a little technical, that was kind of combining some of the wireless data into the older system that wasn't quite necessarily built for it. And then with the newer onset of what's called EzyNet, which is kind of a broader cloud-based network of location information, it really allows us to kind of pinpoint caller location with much more accuracy. They've been able to do that in the private sector for years now, but because of the costs associated with it and the widespread, you know, prevalence of it, it's been slow to bring 911 up to that level that we kind of expect from DoorDash, unfortunately. So we're getting there. Things are moving in that right direction, which is fantastic. But in addition to the 911 system itself, there's just been an absolute host of changes that I've seen personally in the almost 15 years that I've been doing this. And one of the most worthwhile ones to me in my career so far has been our vehicle locator. I don't know if you guys got something similar in DeKalb where, you know, we can look on a map and we can see exactly where our officers are. And that has just been a wonderful boon, not only to our, you know, situational awareness, but really it gives us the ability to prioritize and allocate resources. And honestly, it also gives us an opportunity to better calm our callers. So if some lady's calling in the middle of the night because she believes there's an intruder in her basement, I could say, okay, my caller or my officer is just pulling into your neighborhood now. And it's like, okay, good. You know, being able to reassure that caller and give them the information that they are desperately seeking has just been huge. So that's probably my single largest technological contribution that I've seen firsthand. But going forward, there's a lot of stuff on the horizon that I can see really changing how we operate. LPR kind of in that same sense, and being able to license plate readers.
Yeah.
Exactly. So stationary, sometimes mobile cameras that are constantly taking photos of license plates and that are constantly getting fed through the, you know, nationwide systems and seeing, hey, this car is, you know, the driver's maybe suspended driver's license, or ooh, this car stolen, and giving us those extra tools to do our jobs more efficiently has just been a profound boon.
Kate, is there anything you're excited about in the future for TCs? I mean, would it be nice to be able to see what's going on the other end of the line as opposed to just talking to somebody? It's there. Tell me
about it. It's there. There's So we use Rapid SOS, which I'm sure majority of agencies do. So Rapid SOS is actually like a separate company that started, and they have contracts with Google and Apple, or Android and Apple. And that's all of our 911s, most of them, will come through this. It's a web-based program, and it shows us exactly on the map where they are, which sometimes is even better than our 911 like CAD map that we're able to look at it within our dispatch program. So we have that. And then because of those contracts with Apple and Google, we will sometimes get, if the user allows it to and shares their emergency information, it will show us whose phone it is, their age, allergies, sometimes address, location, or where like their home address is. It will also show us if they've designated any emergency contact, and it will give us all that information. So then that can potentially help us, and has helped us, in locating someone if they're calling 911, like I mentioned earlier, in an apartment building. If their address is there with the apartment, boom. I mean, we kind of know where we're going automatically. And then they just started this option. You have to have one of the much newer iPhones, but it's called Live Feed. And you can send a request to the user that says share feed, and it will allow them to turn their camera on, and it will live stream, or they can send photos of whatever it is that's going on right in front of them. And there are other programs that offer this too. I think Prepared 911 is one that we've also kind of looked into, and it gives us the option to send a link to someone's phone, and it becomes pretty much a live reporting of what exactly is going on. Now, I've been to many trainings where some dispatchers are not a fan of this. They don't want to see it, which I completely understand. And I mean, they do have the option on all of these. They can like blur out the images or blur out the feed, so you don't have to see anything. I actually went to a training with someone from a different department. He's a Army vet. He's like, I joined this because I didn't want to see things anymore. And I can completely understand that. So I think it's good. But then again, on the other side of things, I think it could potentially expose us to a lot more trauma that we would not normally see how many years ago. So it's good and bad. Me personally, I'll take all the technology I can get, because the more information that I can give to my responders before they even get on scene, I think that's crucial. That's just my personal thing with it.
And to that point, you know, we talk about police officers. I know Kirk is like, hey, you want to be there in the moment. And even with our body-worn cameras, our BWCs, you know, I have the ability, you know, to mobily go in and look and see when an officer's on a stop and actually see what he's seeing. And we don't do it often, but we could do it. And it's something we could, you know, and believe me, we thought about maybe making that a piece of the dispatch center as well. But then, like you said, Kate, part of it is like, well, you know, it's kind of, I mean, do you really want to see all that? Sometimes things, right. You know, some can go bad, and then you're actually seeing it firsthand, and it might not be something that you know, like you said, the more trauma that you get from that, even if it's just a fight, I mean, you know, it could be a little bit, you're adding more stressors, which we, of course, want to prevent as much as possible. But I also understand the impact that it could have, though. I mean, for you to be able to see it and say, hey, he's actually fighting with him right now, blah, 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 instead of, you know, having a time on the radio where he can't get to his emergency button, or he or she can't chime up, and you can actually see it in real time and say, hey, they're fighting. You need to get over there, step it up. I can see the benefit in that. I just worry about the stressors as well, and the more trauma that we put you guys through. So that's my concern as well.
Fantastic. Hey, so before we close up, if you have top off Colonel McGreal in a few minutes, thank you for being part of the podcast. I apologize that Chief Bird and Eric and Kate took up all the time talking so much, but you know, I think we're used to it with Chief Bird.
Yeah.
You know, hey, but one more thing, and I'll let you guys talk about anything you really want to after this, but let me know, do any of you have an interesting, crazy, funny, heartwarming story, something that impacted you, if it's funny, that happened in your dispatch days that you'd like to share with the community? Eric, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So I'm glad you put it that way, because and I've been doing this job for a while now, and my I've had a lot of rough calls. I've had a lot of funny calls, and over time, they just start to normalize to some degree. It's you know, I kick myself for not writing all these down, but I was at some, you know, social gathering, I think my wife's Christmas party or something along those lines. And, you know, oh, yeah, I'm a 911 dispatcher. And, oh, what's your craziest story? And I'm like, you probably don't want to hear my craziest story because it's not fit for this location. So my wife chimed in and she told my story for me. And this is an interesting one because I'd totally forgotten this story because I'd probably told her so many over the years. But this one stuck with her and it's now my go-to because it's light enough for
all audiences.
Exactly. So I get a 911 call from a woman who was reporting that she was in her trailer and that her good friend, famed country singer Willie Nelson, was having a heart attack in her trailer in O'Fallon, Illinois. So knowing that mental illness is kind of a common, far too common concern of ours, I did not believe her. But with that being said, I didn't know exactly what she was dealing with. And regardless, we treat every call the same. We're gonna give it 100% of our effort to make sure that we give every amount of assistance we possibly can. So we go through the whole process of providing CPR instructions over the telephone, and I got her to the point where the Willie Nelson is flat on his back, and we got hands with, you know, on the chest, and we're pumping 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and we're doing this. I got EMS on the way, and they arrive and they open the trailer door and she is absolutely doing CPR. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. They get a little closer, and she's doing 1, 2, 3, 4 on the couch cushion. So yeah, so I'm so glad that I went through the process to make sure that she was giving good quality compressions to the couch cushion. But again, you never know. I'm not gonna roll that dice. I'm gonna give 100% every time.
Hey, do you have anything you want to share? Not to put you on the spot, but if you don't,
it's okay. I think kind of going back to what we talked about earlier with like teamwork, this job, yes, you're doing your own tasks, but this job is, you're nothing without your partners, absolutely nothing. And so I was like, what story am I going to tell? Well, one of my, I guess stories, back in 2020, we had a double shooting. There was two of us in the room. That's it. Two of us in the room to handle a double shooting. We're both on 911s. I'm trying to get police going. My partner's trying to get fire going. And we got there as quick as we could. We got everything secured. But the story that I'm going with is that we both were in sync with each other, and that call situation could have went one of two ways, and it went to the best way it possibly could, only because my partner at the time and I were able to work together, and she picked up my slack, I picked up her slack, and we were able to do it cohesively together. Because like I said, this job is hard enough with the things that we have to hear, see, the people we have to sometimes talk to, the hard stuff. So to be hard on one another and not have that teamwork with one another, I don't think is necessary. It's something that we absolutely need to be together on. Like, this job is hard enough. We need to have each other through and through on everything that we have to experience.
I think Chief Bird and I can relate to that, just in that when you have those hard, tough times and you work together and it comes through and everything works out great, it's like high fives, and you just,
yep,
it's that awesome feeling that you have, like when the, it went awesome. That was awesome. That was great.
We did
what we're supposed to do. Yeah, we did the best we could. It was awesome. So thank you for that. Yeah. Chief Bird, do you have any parting words?
No, I just want to thank Kate and Eric both for doing what you do. I know how tough this job is. You know, I go down, Kate, to tell you, I come into the dispatch room on a regular basis just to say hello and And I know they're busy. Sometimes I have to go and turn around and walk right out because I'm like, they like, you know, it's kind of like, Chief, we ain't got time for you today. So, and that's okay with me. It truly is because I understand how important and how tough their job is. And I think we do a lot of things, outside of this department. We go to the movies together. I plan a lot of events so we can have that cohesive group, you know, within the framework of all my divisions. I encourage everyone, hey, go to the movies with us. Let's go do this. Let's go do that. Let's go to the Cubs game, which, you know, Kate has done with me as well. And we have a great time, but we get to know each other outside of the four walls of this building. And that's so important when you run into significant issues. Knock on wood, we're good here in DeKalb, but I was with the state police and we lost four troopers in 1 year. And I tell you, because of how cohesive we were as a group, it made the difference and it got us through it. So I know how important it is, but dispatch, you guys are doing a great job, Eric, Kate, and all your partners. Please express to all of them how much we appreciate them on the law enforcement side. So thank you.
Yeah, Kate, and you probably got to know one person just too well. Right? He's your husband. Yeah.
Yeah, right, Kirk.
Probably went a little too fast. Right. All right. Hey, so thank you so much. This has been another great episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. Remember that if you are looking to buy a home or refinance, Dave Hochberg's your guy at 855-56-DAVID. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Kate, Eric, Chief Byrd, Colonel McGreal. Thank you very much.